want your soul.
What I'm about to tell you has haunted me for the past 3 years, and I never told anybody about it until now. I work as security for a big medical research company. I started a few years ago, and it was a pretty normal day-to-day job, for the most part. I'd spend most of my working hours staring at camera feeds and patrolling around the perimeter, with no incidents ever occurring. Then, one day, I was called into the office for a talk with the big shots in the company. Some of the higher-ups, which I'd never even seen before, were there. So I expected them to even fire me over something I screwed up, or even worse, a lawsuit or something. But their reason for calling me in caught me by surprise. "You've been with us for a while now, and you've proven yourself to be a valuable asset to the company. But I can tell you're made for bigger things. How would you like to undertake a more momentous project?" One of the bosses grinned widely at me. He went on to explain that the company was going through an experimental project which, if done correctly, could cure depression. They all seemed especially excited about it, stating it would go down in history. The catch was, I would need to take a 2-month-long trip to one of the company's compounds where the experiment was to be conducted. I would have to stay there for the entirety of the experiment and would be briefed on the details upon survival. I was about to politely decline, but when they mentioned the compensation, my jaw dropped. Before I knew it, I was on a plane to the compound where I would meet the rest of the staff. Upon landing, I was escorted to a remote mountain area where the facility was located. I wouldn't have even seen the facility had it not been for a bulkhead door leading underground. I noticed that the company didn't cut any corners with the construction of the facility either. The facility itself was divided into 2 sections, east where the patients would be and west for the staff. The middle was designed as a control room. The whole compound was very ostentatious in regards of high-tech equipment, electronic doors, rooms and amenities provided to the participants. There were a dozen other teams on board, including 3 other security members. A medic, specialist in psychology and psychiatry, and the team lead, Dr. Miller. 5 volunteers who were diagnosed with depression were there with us, who were familiar with the project. Our escorts reminded us that we are not allowed to leave the compound from the start of the experiment until the end, so as not to disrupt the project due to its sensitivity. The subjects themselves were not allowed to even exit their rooms for 2 months. We were told we can simply send a message via the master computer in case of an emergency, and their escorts would be there within minutes. Once inside, Dr. Miller briefed us on our duties. As security, mine was to simply patrol the area, monitor the live feed on the cameras, and restrain the subjects in case they acted up. Miller explained that every night at exactly 21:43 p.m., the subjects would be exposed to a certain radio frequency over the course of 4 seconds, which would affect their brain and eventually successfully eliminate depression completely. He didn't go into details about how exactly it's supposed to work. All the staff would be wearing noise-canceling headphones to avoid exposure to the signal, due to possible adverse effects. We settled in and prepared for the first day of work. The research team was conducting surveys and tests on the subjects, while I did exactly what I did back at the company, watched the live feed. At 21:30, Miller assembled all the staff in the control room for the radio signal. He spoke to the patients through the loudspeakers, asking them to be as quiet as possible, since it was almost time for the radio signal to be played through the loudspeakers again. Miller gave all of us a pair of soundproof headphones and personally made sure they were adequately set on each member. All outside noises were instantly silenced when I put on my own set. Once that was done, the doctor put a pair on his own ears and pressed a button on the desk. A bright red light appeared above our heads, which indicated that the headphones are to be kept on until it was over. Miller observed us one more time, and after he made sure we were strapped in, he pressed another button. After a few seconds, he pressed the same button again, and the red light turned into a green one. He took off his headphones, and the rest of us followed. "Subjects, please raise your hands as I call on you," Miller said over the loudspeakers and proceeded to call their names. "Subject 1, Subject 2, Subject 3. Subject 3, please raise your hand. Subject 3, do you hear my voice?" The first two subjects responded, but the third one just sat, motionless, staring blankly in front of himself. "Subject 3! Miller then became impatient. "God damn it, security, please go and make sure all the subjects are all right. Research team, proceed with the survey and please use caution." I went along with one of the security members and two of the doctors to the east section where the subjects were detained. I looked through the thick glass door in Subject 1's room and he seemed okay. Subject 2 was fine as well. With each subject I checked, I'd swipe my cards on the door to unlock it, and the research team would proceed to examine the subjects. When I approached the door for Subject 3, he still sat on his bed with his gaze fixed to the wall in front. "Hey buddy, you okay in there?" I knocked on the door loudly, and there was no response. "Hey, can you hear me?" Not even a blink. I stared at the subject through the thick pane of glass, and I couldn't make it out from the noise of the other staff members, but it looked like the subject's lips were moving. I swiped the key card on the door and slid it open. I carefully stepped inside, observing the subject and his surroundings. His room seemed pristine, just as the day when we arrived. He had half-unpacked bags in the corner of the room. I looked at him carefully, focusing on the movement of his lips. He was indeed saying something, but I couldn't make it out. "Sir, are you okay?" I called at him again. He turned his head towards me very slowly while sitting in the same position. "I'm fine." He grinned widely, not blinking. I can't explain why, but when he looked at me, I felt the hairs on the back of my neck stand straight. Something was off here, something in that unrelenting gaze that made every fiber of my being want to get away from him, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Luckily, one of the doctors stepped in, and as he did, the subject seemed to return to normal, grin gone and all. I got out of there as fast as I could without arousing any attention. Subjects 4 and 5 were responsive, and so I was dismissed for the rest of the evening. The following day, I had guard duty again, so I spent most of the time staring at the camera feeds. The subjects were doing their normal everyday activities and having examinations by the medical staff, but other than that, nothing in particular happened. I observed Subject 3 carefully, but nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Night came, and it was time for the signal to be played once again. The subjects were told to stand facing the door this time, while the signal was played and to be ready for inspection. We all repeated the routine, headphones on, red light on. But something was different this time. Although I couldn't hear the signal, I felt something when Miller pressed the button. It's hard to explain, but it felt as if for those 4 seconds, I was standing naked, in the dark, in front of God knows what. I had never felt so vulnerable in my entire life like I did during those 4 seconds. I then heard one of my coworkers whisper my name, but when I looked to them, they were focused on Miller. There was no way I heard anything through these headphones, so had my brain played a trick on me from the deafening silence? It must have been. I became increasingly agitated for some reason and wanted to just throw these headphones on the ground. This effect seems to have been mutual with everyone, because they looked restless, shifting their weight from one leg to another, looking around at seemingly nothing in particular. One of the staff members ignored Miller's warning and took the headphones off while the light was still red. But Miller hadn't noticed because he was transfixed on the cameras. The light finally turned green, and I felt a wave of relief wash over me as I took off my headset. Miller then spoke over the loudspeakers to the subjects again. "Subject 1, raise your hand." It was then that I glanced at the cameras and noticed that all 5 subjects were still standing motionless. I would have thought the cameras froze had it not been for the timer in the corner. Subject 1, please raise your hand, Miller repeated, but to no avail. Security, please go check on them. This time, two other security guards took the role of securing the subjects. I watched on the feed as they approached the doors and tried to get a response from them, but they just stared blankly. One of the guards opened the door to Subject 1's room and entered, and then, all of a sudden, the power went out, and the entire room was enveloped in darkness and total silence. And then, I heard what sounded like a barrage of gunshots, in the most blood-curdling, demonic scream I'd ever heard in my life, coming from the east section. Seconds later, a frantic set of footsteps resounded in the corridor next to the control room, and one of the guards barged in, breathing heavily and with a look of pure terror on his face. "Lock the east section down now," he shouted between breaths. "Why? What happened?" Miller asked. "Just do it." The power came back on as soon as Miller slammed a button, which beeped loudly. The guard holstered his gun and entered the room, exhaling and out of breath. "Oh my God," I heard one of the staff members mumble. Even Miller was pale as a sheet of paper. "Whatever those patients were before," he said as we stared in horror at what was on the camera feed, "they're no longer that. They're no longer human." To this day, I can't describe what I saw on those cameras in words which would do it justice to the terror I felt, but I'll do my best to explain it here. Subject 1 was standing in his room facing the door, still motionless, but on the floor in front of him was the body of a security guard. I couldn't tell what happened to him, but whatever it was must have been gruesome, because his side was cut open and blood was smeared on the floor and walls in a way that indicated that he died a quick death from a sharp slice. Subject 2 was lying dead on the floor, dried up blood caking his mouth, eyes, nose, and ears. Subject 3 sat on his bed and stared at the wall in front blankly, just like the previous night. He was whispering something, but none of us knew nor wanted to know what, so when one of the staff members suggested turning up the volume, his idea was quickly shut down and the camera feed was muted. Subject 4 was the one who froze my bone to the marrow, because at first we couldn't see him anywhere in the feed, and then someone pointed out to the slight movement of something in the upper corner of the camera. Miller used a button to move the camera upward, and when it reached the ceiling, some of the staff members gasped. Subject 4 was standing on the ceiling on all fours like a spider, his head twisted at an unnatural angle. The subject jerked his head towards it and scurried on all fours across the ceiling towards the camera at an impossible speed until the entire camera feed was covered with his face and bloodshot eyes. His eyes rapidly darted in all directions, never blinking. I had to look away from it because I felt so uncomfortable. Subject 5 was slamming the door with his head, leaving a bloody stain on the glass. The head thumps were changing intermittently, sometimes weak and other times loud enough for us to hear them all the way to the control room. It was an unsettling sound, to say the least. "Miller, what in the fuck just happened?" one of the doctors asked, and we all looked to the team lead, demanding an answer.
I don't know."
Miller shook his head in bewilderment, still pale.
"Bullshit," one of the guards yelled. "You know something. You did something to them with that signal of yours, didn't you?"
You don't understand. This wasn't supposed to happen."
"Well, what was supposed to happen?" another member jumped in. "Nothing. Nothing was supposed to happen."
Miller became defensive now.
"Then what did you play on that fucking radio signal?" "There was no radio signal."
Silence fell on the room as Miller shouted those words, and for a brief moment, the sound of Subject 5 thumping his head on the glass permeated the room.
"There never was a radio signal. This was all supposed to be a placebo effect. I have no idea what's going on here," Miller continued. "Then how the fuck do you explain this?" And I pointed to the cameras.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there was some kind of inaudible signal played on our headphones and it caused some sort of hallucinatory effects. I don't know."
"Hallucinatory effects? You think what we're seeing on the cameras isn't really what we're seeing? I just was back there and what I saw seemed pretty fucking real,"
the guard shouted. There were a few more minutes of people bickering before Miller shut them up. I think that whatever is going on here obviously cannot be explained by logic. He looked at the cameras and Subject 4 was now on the opposite wall, moving his head left and right in a jerky motion for no apparent reason. The knocking from Subject 5 never stopped, and this seemed to agitate everyone, especially because we couldn't predict when the next knock would come and how loud it would be, causing some people to get startled. Alright, well, we need to get the fuck out of here. Contact our escort, I said. Miller sat at the master PC and opened a program which I wasn't familiar with. In a chat window opened and Miller typed, "Send help now." Below the message, it said user is typing, and then another message came through. "State your emergency." Miller typed frantically, making typos along the way. "Guard dead, patient gone crazy, send help now." The person on the other end was typing for a few more seconds until another message came through. "Proceed with the project." "What the hell?" some of us said in unison as Miller frantically sent more messages to the person on the other end and got another response. "Proceed with the project," in all caps. The user then disconnected from the chat. We sat there in complete silence with nothing but our thoughts and the incessant thumping, which grew louder by the second. I glanced at the camera feed and saw that the glass door of Subject 5's room had a significantly larger amount of blood on the door, and the subject's head and face were mutilated beyond recognition. Still, he kept at it relentlessly. Okay, well, we can get out through the main door, and then we should be able to walk back from there. Might take a while, but I think we can do it," Miller said. We all stared in silence as we shared the same feelings about Miller's suggestion. The main door was directly at the end of the corridor where the patients were being kept in the east section. When some members voiced their disagreement about this, Miller explained that there's also a door in the west section, but that couldn't be opened from the inside, since it had no card reader. It had been created only for the purpose of emergency teams coming in and to discourage project members from wandering outside and jeopardizing the project. Eventually, we agreed that we needed to send someone through the main door, who would then close it behind themselves and open the door in the west section, while leaving the subject safely locked. In retrospect, it would have been easier to just go through the corridor and exit from the east section rather than wait for someone to come around the other side. But the problem was, nobody wanted to go. Although the patients were locked up behind heavy doors, just the thought of passing through that place filled me, and apparently everybody else, with inexplicable dread. All of us knew the doors would hold and not let the subjects break through, but there was something holding us back. Something about going through that corridor that filled us with immobilizing fear. "All right, fuck it. I'll go," one of the staff members finally said. "I'll come with you," a guard jumped in, drawing his gun. "We'll be monitoring you via the cameras," Miller remarked with visible relief. "The subjects are locked behind heavy-duty glass doors, so there's no way they can breach it. But still, please be very careful." In a matter of seconds, the two volunteers exited the control room and hesitantly entered the east section. As if on cue, the head bashing from Subject 5 abruptly stopped. All four subjects stopped doing whatever they were doing prior to that and stared at one same spot. It didn't take us long to realize that the subjects were staring in the direction of the two volunteers. It was as if they could see them through the walls even before they entered the east section. "We're in," the guard said via the radio, and we all stared at the camera feed, holding our breaths. It was unnaturally quiet, even with the two members' footsteps echoing through the camera feed. As the two of them passed by each subject's room, the subjects followed them with their gaze in unison. And then the staff member stopped in front of the door of Subject 1, unbeknownst to the guard, who continued striding towards the door. Subject 1 and the staff member stared at each other in some sort of a trance, with only the thick glass separating them. The entire team held their breath in anticipation, and then a terrifying realization hit me like a ton of bricks. The research member who went with the guard was the same one who took his headphones off earlier during the radio signal. "Ah, fuck, the door's locked," the guard shouted and tried to open the bulkhead over and over, but it wouldn't budge. I was transfixed on the research member in front of the door the entire time. With a robotic motion, he pulled out his keycard from his pocket and placed it to the door. I was about to start shouting, but it was too late. The loud beeping noise already resounded in an alarmingly loud manner, and the door slid open. "Get the hell out of there," I yelled to the guard over the radio, who was already sprinting full on across the hallway. The camera started glitching and freezing at this point, so we couldn't see clearly what was going on. But from the frames where the image would recover, we saw that all subjects, as well as the research member, were following the guard with their gaze, not moving from their spots. The guard bumped into the door, violently trying to open it. "Fuck! The door's locked! Miller, open it up!" he yelled. By this moment, the camera feed completely cut off and all we had to go by was the sound from the radio, which emanated the guard's panting. "Miller, what the fuck are you doing? Open it up right now!" someone in the room yelled as the guard's pleading voice got drowned out by the group shouting. "Do you all want to let those things out?" He gave us a stern look and deep inside, I knew he was right. "Please, please, for the love of God, they're coming. Open the door, please," the guard pleaded through the radio. We heard a few gunshots echoing through the entire facility and the guard's panicked breaths, and then silence, for a few seconds at least. After a few seconds, the radio crackled back to life and there was a soft humming noise coming from it. It sounded like a lullaby, but a very unpleasant one. No one said a word for a long time, listening to that humming noise which repeated the same irritating melody over and over. We tried turning it off, but the sound persisted. Even after smashing the radio on the ground, the humming continued. And then one of the female staff members spoke up. "I think we have another way out." "Okay, what is it?" Miller asked. "I can override the west door from the master computer by inputting it as an emergency, since all the doors are electronic. But what?" I asked when I saw she hesitated. "It will open all the doors in the facility." For a few seconds, the only sound that could be heard in the control room was the incessant humming from the radio. "I think we need to consider our options here," one of the remaining staff members said. "For all we know, the door in the west section might not even open. This could all be a setup," I replied. "And what if they're waiting for us outside? There's no way they'll just let us walk free." "If we stay here, we'll die," the remaining security guard said. Eventually, everyone agreed on overriding the doors, even if it meant opening the locks in the east section. The female researcher sat at the master PC and typed and clicked vigorously. "This might take a while." "Well, hurry it up," the guard responded, visibly agitated. "You want to sit and fucking try?" she turned to him. "All right, everybody just shut up. Calm down. Everybody needs to calm down and give the PC expert some space." Miller was raising his hands now. This situation was starting to get to us all, and it was visible from our hostility towards each other. Even Miller himself had a hard time putting on a straight face. Everyone went quiet for a while, and that damned humming was the only sound which persisted. I tried to ignore it as much as I could, but the harder I tried, the more I seemed to be drawn into it. The humming was consistent and sounded like it was on a loop. Same intonation, same length of pause before starting again. Literally, like someone was just replaying it over and over. "What did you just say?" the guard asked Miller, breaking the silence. "What? I didn't say anything," Miller responded, baffled. The guard then stood up and clenched his fists. "I just heard you say something." Well, it must have been your imagination, because I didn't say anything." Miller then turned his head back to the member at the PC. "Don't fucking lie to me, Miller." The guard was in his face now. "You just said that we're all going to die here, and I heard you." Miller pushed him back. "What the fuck are you talking about? I didn't say anything. Get the fuck away from me." "You're the reason why we're here. This is all your fault," the guard hissed. At this point, everyone else tried calming the two of them down, shouting over each other.
"I told you that I don't know anything," Miller yelled at the guard as the crowd finally settled.
"Maybe if you paid attention in school more than you do now, you'd be in my position and understand of being a good-for-nothing, minimum-wage guard with no fucking future."
And on that note, things started happening very fast. As Miller turned his back to the guard pulled his gun out and shot a bullet straight into the back of Miller's head. There were screams, and Miller's body fell limply to the floor, his eyes wide open in shock, and his blood collecting around his head on the floor. My ears were ringing from the gunshot, and I pulled my own gun out and pointed it at the guard, who was in utter shock at what he just did.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I didn't mean to.
I'm gonna need you to lower your gun, I demanded.
I didn't mean to, fuck.
The guard was sobbing now.
I understand, okay?
We all had reason to believe he was behind this, but I need you to lower that gun right now so we can talk.
I'm sorry. He shook his head, sobbing.
The guard then put the gun to his temple and fired faster than I could react, causing another ear-splitting bang. The wall next to him was smeared in red and he lay dead on the floor, and the humming suddenly stopped and turned into sinister chuckling before that stopped as well, leaving us in complete silence. I mumbled to myself in disbelief as the other team members gasped and cried.
"How close are you to opening those doors?" I asked. The PC lady wiped her tears and responded, "Just a few more minutes." She got back to work and the rest of us waited, trying not to look at the dead bodies.
"I'm almost there," she said after a while. The subjects could apparently sense this because they started to rattle and bang on the door, causing us to recoil. We prayed that the door would hold at least until all the locks were disabled.
"Okay, when the doors open, everybody needs to run. And if the exit is locked, hide somewhere in the rooms," I said.
One of the members who knew how to use a gun picked up the one from the guard and we all got ready mentally. My heart was thumping a million times per hour and I tried not to think about those things in the east section as their rattling became louder and more desperate.
"Okay, get ready. Here it comes. Let's go," the PC expert announced.
There was a loud beep which signaled that the doors were unlocked and that was our cue. And apparently, that was the cue for the subjects as well, because right after that beeping sound, there was a scream so violent and demonic that I could instantly feel the blood draining from my face.
"Everybody run!" I screamed, and we all bolted for the door and towards the west section.
As soon as we opened the control room door, the blood-curdling screams permeated the corridor, muffling the panicked panting of my co-workers. Before we even reached the west section door, a scream of one of our members was heard, but we had no time to turn around because we heard rapid breathing and loud, clumsy footsteps right at our heels. The screams now echoed throughout the entire facility, and it sounded like they were merely inches behind me, which made me run faster than I ever thought possible. I didn't dare look back out of fear of what I would see behind me, so I just kept running and praying those things were not faster. I tried not to think about them grabbing me, as I heard a few gunshots behind, followed by a loud cry of pain and vile crunching sounds. The exit was so close now. I thought that at any moment, I would feel a hand wrap around my arm or ankle, and that I would be pulled back into that hellhole, but my adrenaline pushed me to run. There was a flight of stairs leading up, and on top of them, a door which opened to the cold night sky. I tumbled over the threshold, practically rolling forward on the grass before coming to a stop. Never before has the cold wind felt more welcoming than in that moment, but I had no time for respite. Another desperate scream ensued, and I looked back just in time to see the PC lady get dragged down the stairs into the dark underground by a long, bony arm. And then all the sounds stopped. I looked to my left where the only other surviving member was, and we both stared at the dark entrance, unable to move our gazes from it. And then the humming started again. It echoed from the stairway, even more unsettling than it was over the radio. And a thin and tall figure with elongated extremities appeared at the top of the stairs. Whatever human was left in the subject when he was locked in the room was gone now entirely. The creature walked slowly,
but deliberately, with a disfigured grin on its face. I lifted and pointed my gun at it and fired, and the creature barely even flinched and just kept coming right at me. I shot again and again until I was out of bullets, and the subject just chuckled, just like it did over the radio when Miller and the guard died. It got dangerously close, and I felt powerless to move. It grinned even more widely, and then I heard someone shout, "Open fire!" And before I knew it, the creature was showered with a storm of bullets. The force of such firepower caused it to stumble backwards and then screech in anger before it finally dropped dead. And the shooting didn't stop then either, for a solid 10 more seconds. I turned around and was quickly faced with soldiers, shouting and forcing me and the other staff member to our knees. A man in a business suit then stepped forward and smiled. I recognized him as the guy who offered me this project back in the office. "I'd like to thank you in the company's name for your selfless contribution," he said calmly. "Our deadline was 2 months, but you guys managed to complete it in just 2 days. You guys are the MVPs of the show. Now, I know you have a lot of questions, but these things are best left, you know, unanswered." "You sick son of a bitch," the other survivor grunted. "When we get back, I'm going to the police and the press. You're going to rot in prison for what you've done to these people." "Oh, now that's going to be a problem. You signed an NDA in your contract, which strictly said you would not disclose any classified information to outside sources. You would have known if you, you know, read it," the man said. He sighed and continued. "You know, it just seems to me that you need more time to think about all this. Boys, go ahead and take that one back in." A couple of soldiers then grabbed the researcher and hauled him to the entrance while he was begging and screaming. They threw him in and used a keycard to lock the door while the man continued to beg them to let him out, swearing he would never say a word to anybody. After only a few seconds, his screaming became much more violent and then quickly faded away. The man in the suit shook his head in disappointment and then turned to me. "Now, we won't have to do the same thing to you, right? You'll keep this a secret, yeah?" He knelt down and squatted in front of me, and I nodded timidly. The man placed his hand behind his ear and turned it towards me. "What's that? I can't quite hear you." "I said I'll keep it a secret, sir." I was avoiding his eye contact, but I responded to him. "Good, because in addition to the promised compensation, you just scored a huge extra bonus. And on top of that, you've been promoted to chief of security." And then he smiled at me. "If that doesn't sound appealing, perhaps you would prefer a more suitable reward, like working in certain company projects and such." I shook my head in defeat. "Great. Now let's get out of here. It's getting kind of cold. And somebody get our investor on the line. I need to congratulate him on a successful project."